So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
What in the world are you trying to prove, Rowdy Roddy Piper?
I don't have to prove nothing. I have proven everything I have ever needed to prove. That's why I'm in the Boston Gardens, the legend killer himself, has got Hulkamania. Hulkamania. They say Hulkamania's running wild. You know what Hulkamania is? You know what Hulkamania is? Hulkamania is three winos in a parking lot, man.
You know
what Hulkamania is?
Just a minute here.
You know what Hulkamania is? They don't know how strong you are. 24-inch pythons. Do you want snakes? You want snakes?
Why? You seem to be awfully laid back considering the position that you're in.
Huh? You know what happens to the Hulk? You ever seen the cartoon? All of a sudden, when he's finished, he comes back to just a puny little fella with all kinds of torn clothes. Is that what you want to be? You see, that's what happens when the Hulk's finished. He turns puny. Them pythons shrink. You want snakes? You want to be called a snake, huh? Me, I'll be Piper the Viper, huh? What you're coming up against is something you have never, ever seen before. I see you up here sweating. I don't blame you. From now on, brother, after the garden, when you say Roddy Piper, you'll smile and sweat.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock, alongside Wei Ting, who is brought to you today by Carlsberg Beer and a almost like a kind of jujitsu style Carlsberg shirt with the triangle.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been meaning to speak to you about this.
That I call you out on your shirts?
Yeah, on like an audio only podcast. I don't know if it's that compelling.
Have you ever heard the term theater of the mind?
You and I
are artists that are painting a verbal picture.
Okay. Well, why just my shirt? Why not end, hey, you got a really nice mouse pad here.
It's not a nice mouse pad because I've had it for years and it's like,
well, who the hell even uses mouse pads anymore?
I do.
These are Lay's optical mice. They don't need mouse pads.
Oh, dude, the idea of
what
that
you,
on the
yeah,
desk?
It's
no.
Perfectly fine.
Listen to that sound.
Like, you've been carrying this piece of foam with you your whole life.
Like, since birth.
Forever.
Yeah.
I don't even know why you would need the mouse. You got a trackpad. You're using a laptop.
Are you kidding me? Like, just moving it on my... No way.
So, John's like using...
You're an Apple hipster.
What the fuck does that have to do with apples?
It means, just because this is what Apple does, this is what everyone should do. And instead, my PC says...
Apple makes mice.
I think you're
fucking prejudice. You're an Apple prejudice. You're an Appleist. Appleist.
Wouldn't an Appleist mean that I'm pro-Apple?
Well, a racist means you're... Okay, fine. You're Apple-phobic. Is what you are.
Apple-phobic?
Yeah.
Well, you're being apoplectic about the positives of a PC.
Anyway.
It stands for positive contribution. World of technology. How are you?
Yeah. I'm in a bad mood now.
Wow.
Shit.
You know what? I'm not in a great mood either.
Then fuck off.
Wow.
No show.
Unbelievable.
No show. Sorry, Piper fans.
Well.
No show.
Why are you so distraught today?
I'm not, actually.
No.
I'm fine. I'm just playing. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you want to ask my PC how it's doing?
No. Because
it's doing great.
All right. That's cool.
This computer is only 6 months old. I love this thing. It's my favorite computer I've ever
owned. Haven't spilled coffee on it yet once, I take it.
Nope. As I have my coffee today.
Your coffee is very close.
It's amazing. I went to Tim Hortons and they had coffee. What a novel concept.
You probably didn't ask for decaf, did you?
I didn't, but you know what? I would bet that in the middle of the day, they would have tons of decaf ready.
Well, that would make sense.
They've made commercials promoting the fact that they sell decaf. So it's an internal push from Tim Hortons.
I understand. I just assume it's probably not that popular of a choice at that time of night.
I didn't realize there was such a negativity towards decaf coffee as I've received since Monday night. There's a lot of anti-decaf coffee.
Have you received death threats as a result of your decaf?
No, but people telling me that it's, preference. You know, warm brown water was what one person used to describe it as.
It's kind of like the same idea as a de-alcoholized beer.
Sometimes a drink is just a nice, soothing drink.
Yeah, my dad loves that stuff. My dad,
decaf?
No, de-alcoholized beer.
Oh.
He loves that stuff.
Well, if you like the taste of beer, enjoy the taste of beer, and I don't like the effects of it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people... Well, but so what? That means you would drink that stuff?
Yes.
Wow.
I've had is that how you call it? De-alcoholized beer?
I think so.
0% beer. Non-alcoholic
just
beer.
Just as much.
I've had it before, and it's not the worst thing in the world. But
why would you... Like, I think a lot of people feel the opposite. They like the effects of beer, but they don't like the taste.
Well, I don't fall into that category.
You're just weird.
I hate the effects of beer.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. You just like the taste.
Yeah, that's all.
That's interesting. Okay. So why don't you buy de-alcoholized beer? It's way cheaper.
Yeah, you're right.
You don't even need to show your ID.
Well,
you don't need to go to the LCBO.
The taste of it is, I said, it's not horrible, but it's not great either. It's not a substitute taste-wise for the actual beer.
Okay.
Is there any beer you've been enjoying this summer?
No, I'm not very particular. Yeah, I'm more of a weak guy. So.
What was the beer we got on Friday night at the rib place we went to?
I don't know.
That was a good beer.
Yeah,
I ordered one, then you got one, and I had two of them because they were really good. I can't remember the name.
I remember. It was Pabst Blue Ribbon.
No, I got that later. But there was a really good beer on tap at this rib place we went to. Are we going to update our rib situation? Because we forgot on Monday.
Maybe at the end of the show.
Okay, maybe at the end of the show. We've got a lot to discuss. Today we are chatting the life and career of one Roderick Toombs, Roddy Piper. We touched upon it briefly on Monday. I feel there's been so much on Roddy Piper. I felt it was sometimes it's unfortunate, of course, whenever someone passes away. But I feel weird doing our separate review of something so disconnected from what was a massive career in professional wrestling.
Yeah, I think it's also an opportunity, you know, while obviously he's on everybody's mind, for a lot of people like myself who really didn't get to see his runs, you know, during my time as a wrestling fan, to go back and revisit some of his, you know, more classic moments that I think I've seen a lot on clips, but I've never actually sat down to watch in their full form.
Yeah, and I mean, whenever a major figure dies, obviously, I mean, I'll go back and I'm learning so much about these guys, things that maybe I hadn't known at first hand. So, I mean, the ability to have a show like this, it also gives me, you know, an outlet to go back, watch a lot of stuff, because I would have had no time this weekend to watch any of those G1 matches. Mm-hmm. There's just no way I could have done it.
You should just, like, start podcasting every chore that you have. Like, we should do a podcast on your
You should follow me on Periscope all day long.
Okay.
If you would have seen my Saturday and Sunday, you would have just put your head down and been like, this dude is going to just explode.
You should actually be on Periscope.
No, I will never be
on
Periscope.
I guarantee you, people would love to see you watch wrestling and time your wrestling matches and all that stuff.
It's funny. I've heard every single person that is announcing that they're broadcasting on Periscope, I have yet to hear one person say that they watch someone else on Periscope. Everyone is a star on their own Periscope channel, but I don't know of anyone who like just says, oh, I'm gonna flip on... Drew Carey's Periscope. Let's find out what the price is this morning.
Right.
Drew Carey's life.
Like, whereas, you know, if somebody tweets something crazy, you say, hey, I was on Virgil's Twitter. Did you see him tweet this?
But do you hear from people we work with that go on maybe fighters' Periscopes and stuff like that?
Right. It's not that popular yet, I assume.
Actually, I heard one example last week. This will be our last random tangent, and then we'll get into the life of Roddy Piper. But last week, we were scheduled to do an interview with Jessica Aguilar, myself, and Robin Black. And we were scheduled to do this at 3:45 p.m. And she was, of course, fighting in Brazil. So this was, we were going through the UFC, and they were contacting with the UFC officials in Brazil. 3:45 comes. She's not calling in.
Yeah, it was dreadful. And it wasn't just Pollock and Robin waiting. It was
a whole crew, because we were filming this in our TV studio.
Yeah.
It was going to be a phoner with myself and Robin at our desk. So we're waiting, and we're waiting, and we're waiting. And we're thinking, okay. Sometimes with phoners, listen, some phoners fall apart. And that's just it, and you just, okay, didn't happen. We remain there. An hour after we were supposed to do this.
I actually fell asleep. I took a nap.
You fell asleep by your camera. I can't blame you. And the UFC then said, hey, we're trying to call in. And we can't get through. So earlier in the day, there had been a phoner. And they had left the line on hold the entire time. So they had been trying to call in. Now, they were late, I believe. But still, not as late as they should have been. So after an hour and 15 minutes, we got Jessica Aguilar on for our 8-minute phoner.
Okay, so what's the point of your story?
The point of the story was that I'm asking them, I said, hey, should we just call it quits on this? And someone said, well, we're watching her Periscope and she's doing phone interviews.
Okay.
So they were going on her Periscope. Sorry, this one went into just absolutely nothing to do with Periscope, but I brought it all back in.
So it's thank God we have Periscope for that.
No, not thank God. We could have just simply phoned and maybe realized there was a problem with the phone.
Why are we even talking about Periscope?
I don't know. Let's talk about Roddy Piper. Way, one of the more interesting parts, I think, as we look back at the career of Roddy Piper, this was not a guy that, I mean, we're picking out some of his more memorable matches. This was not a guy whose legacy was great matches.
No, and I think that'll be evident in the review. He did definitely have a number of memorable moments, but it wasn't even to the level of like our Dusty review, where I think you can pick out a handful of championship matches, or like it seemed like history will remember this guy as somebody not necessarily known for his work rate in the ring, but somebody who excelled outside of it.
Drew Money, one of the best promos of all time. And to be honest, I mean, there's a whole generation that will always look at, you know, that is of the utmost importance. And I agree with it. I am much rather if I want someone on my roster and I'm the booker, I want a Roddy Piper over a, you know, pick your technical wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever I say, I'm going to get outraged by people saying, how dare you? But that's really what we're talking about here. Roddy Piper, I mean, that match, that war to settle the score, that was one of the coolest just scenes I can ever recall.
And we say that, it's not like this guy was, you know, somebody like, whatever, a Paul Heyman, who was only just a talker, or any other manager. Like, he was somebody who was of a physical level that could wrestle a match convincingly. And, you know, I wouldn't say maybe the perfect package of, you know, somebody who could talk and have great 5-star matches, but certainly a guy who was probably a 10 on the mic. And, you know, maybe less than that, but still passable.
Well, in a weird way, his wrestling style matched his promos. I mean, here was this just crazy character, and he was this fighter off the streets, and he didn't wrestle pretty, and he didn't wrestle technically proficiently, and he was certainly not going to be confused with Ric Flair. But I think a lot of these guys, they wrestled to what their character would be, and it meshed together. I think for a lot of guys, I mean, it would have been a big disconnect to me if Hulk Hogan was, you know, Luthez in the ring. I mean, he was what he was, and the crowd loved Hulk Hogan.
Do you imagine, though, if Hogan was a Luthez?
Flying head scissors and, you know, working a hammer lock and, you know, just scientifically breaking down his opponent and doing 60-minute Broadways.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't have fit at all. Yeah. And these crowds, I mean, the heat. I go back. I was like, man, to be a wrestling fan in 1984, like if you were just a nerd into pro wrestling and all the territories and all just the crowds of how invested they were in that Hogan-Piper feud in 1985. Oh, my God. We're going to go back. We're going to take a look at his career, and I'll do kind of just a little rundown, and then our first match we'll get into is the infamous dog collar match from Starrcade 83. But prior to that, I mean, a little history on Roddy Piper was him leaving home very early in his life. He never really spoke publicly about what went on during his childhood, but those close to him have kind of always said, like, he overcame a horrific childhood. So you can make of that what you will, but left home very early.
And where exactly was home?
He was born in Saskatoon and moved all over the place. He lived in Winnipeg for a time. He was there on an Indian reservation. Lived in Toronto. Even went to school here in Toronto. He did actually live for a time in Glasgow, Scotland, and was just kind of all over the place and got into professional wrestling in Manitoba. You know, Tony Condello has always taking credit for training him. Piper has noted Al Tomko had a big hand in it as well, so that's a bit of conjecture there. And Piper kind of really got into the industry around 18. He said 15. It was a bit later than that. And then he just went to many different territories as kind of an
enhancement talent. How do you know that when he actually got into it?
Because his first recorded match was, I mean, you just do the math of how old the guy was.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's a pretty easy one when there's dates.
Why would he lie about that?
You're asking a professional wrestler.
What difference does that make? You know, I competed. I started at 15.
Because saying I had a 10-second match with Larry Hennig at the age of 15 instead of the truth that he had a match at 18 that wasn't with Larry Hennig in Manitoba doesn't sound as impressive.
But in the grand scheme of things, who cares?
Okay, you sit down with any pro wrestler over the age of 50 and you ask them that question, they'll be just lost.
Okay.
Anyway, his first major territory was Los Angeles, where he was a very effective heel, and we talked about this on Sunday night. I mean, his feud with Chavo Guerrero Sr. and the whole Guerreros, I mean, it was extremely race-baiting. I mean, Piper would walk around with a shirt that read, like, white is right. I mean, it was just, there was no subtlety to his heel character against the Mexican audience that they were attracting in Los Angeles. But he helped really bring that territory up, which was on its ass at the time. And after that, it was the big run in Portland. And from Portland, that would take him to Mid-Atlantic, which is where we kick things off, which was at the trail end of his run in Mid-Atlantic with Greg Valentine in the dog collar match at Starrcade 1983, with Piper having the distinction of being part of the very first Starrcade and first WrestleMania.
Yeah, incredible.
So there's a trivia note.
I've taken the tape off the ear, you see, because I'm getting tired of Valentine having an even target, you see. What I've done is I got me a whole bunch of things. I got me Indians, I got me straps, I got me chairs, I got me chains, I got a whole bunch of people here in town like this. I got everything I need to do. The only thing I need to do now is get Valentine in the ring, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. You see, he won't fight for no single matches anymore, but you see, brother, it don't matter, because the promotion says you got to do it. You see, what the thing is James Dean ain't dead, brother. They just got him wrapped a little different, man.
We had Gordon Solie and Bob Caudle on commentary, and immediately, just from a visual standpoint, I mean, we had both guys in blue trunks.
Maybe they went
to a bit of a faux pas in pro wrestling.
Maybe they went to the same store.
Well, these two should not be
the only store with trunks.
The only store with trunks in Greensboro. Solie noted a prior ear injury that Piper came into this match with. It starts off with this test of strength, and maybe way you can, for those not familiar, explain this dog collar match and how these two were attached and what was attaching them.
Well, basically, the idea of the match, they're both tied to a dog collar chain around each other's neck. And so I'd say, like, you know, maybe they had between, I'd say maybe like 8 feet between them of chain. And so the match kind of just starts off with both of them standing in front of each other, but with their heads leaning back. So that the idea is that, you know, each person is trying to get enough slack on this chain so that they could grab it and use it as a weapon. But to decrease the slack, of course, you would back away from your opponents to increase the tension of the chain so nobody could have anything to grab with. So a big part of this match is the two of them just, like, basically, you know, pulling back with their necks and standing far from each other to neutralize the match. And I've seen, like, bull rope matches, and I've seen matches like that before, but I haven't really seen them, you know,
done neck to neck.
And not necessarily in this type of way to... it seemed realistic, that the way they were thinking about doing this.
So they started off with a test of strength, using their necks to pull the other towards them. Basically a tug-of-war spot with the neck.
Yeah.
This was probably doing ungodly amounts of nerve damage. Piper whips him first to just huge cheers. I mean, this crowd just wanted to see Valentine get whipped with this dog collar. And the chain. So Piper has the early advantage. Valentine would use the chain, wrapping it around his fist, to punch the ear of Piper. Piper would then wrap the chain around Valentine's face and just yank on it, and then wrap the chain around the post, tying Valentine in the corner, and bust Valentine open from the forehead, mm-hmm. as we got our first blood of the match. They battled on the edge of the apron, and this is where Valentine cracks Piper in the side into his ear and then runs Piper into the post as they fight on the floor. And you can see Piper bleeding from his left ear, which would mess this guy up for months to come, knocking off his equilibrium. Like, this was legitimate, messing up his ear. And Soli, I thought, was so great. He just conveyed the damage to the ear and everything. He illustrated what the performer was going through and the pain that he was having and how this is going to affect the rest of the match. He was great.
I don't know if I've ever seen a match with somebody working on the ear of his opponent.
Yeah, well, that's a new way to go about things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a... the ear is often a body part that is not isolated enough in pro wrestling.
No.
Valentine then wraps the chain around his fist. He continues punching the ear as Piper stumbles around. And then Gordon Soli notes how Valentine is trying to set him up for a souple.
Mm.
Gordon Soli in the souple.
Yeah. What's the story behind that?
That's the actual pronunciation of a suplex, is souple.
What's the origin?
That's just the original, I don't know if it's... a Latin pronunciation of it? I don't know. But that's how it's actually formally called.
That's how we will call him from now on.
The only announcer I know that would have, that would go ahead and call it a souple these days is Mauro Ranallo, who will often call it a souple. But that's about it. No one else will go that far, because I just think the audience would be, what's this guy talking about? Not knowing that it is the actual correct way to identify said move. Piper keeps kicking out. Piper pulls down Valentine, charges him with this comeback as the crowd explodes with Piper, whips him with the chain. Both are worn down. Then Piper hit a vertical souple. Both are down. Sleeper is applied, but Soli points that the forearm is not around the carotid artery properly. This was like Joe Rogan explaining this choke, and he's explaining the submission and with the blood how Valentine's able to escape.
Oh, this is definitely a scene we've seen often in MMA.
This was right out of the tough Brazil bantamweight final on the weekend. And then Piper yanks him off the turnbuckle, strikes him with the chain, and then wraps Valentine's legs with the chain and pins him at 16 minutes and 7 seconds. And Valentine is attacking him after the match. As Gordon Soli notes, we have a new United States champion before he has to clarify... Oh, I'm sorry. This is a non-title match, which shows you, I mean, Roddy Piper was just about to leave the territory. He worked for another month where they took this dog collar match on the road everywhere. But by the end of December, like he was, or into January, he was done with the company. So he was on the way out. Valentine's the champion, and still Piper wins this match. It shows you, Piper did not lose often.
Hmm.
And even in this case, they would go on the road, and I mean, it was all non-title matches, and
it's interesting. Yeah, do you think that's the reason why, you know, he's not necessarily somebody known for his accolades in terms of championships, yet somebody who, I guess, refused to lose a lot?
I give him a lot of credit in the fact he was able to just be so adamant about not losing and the fact that they would acquiesce to him. Even when he was in the WWF and he had won the IC title and he did a huge house show run with Ric Flair, who was WWF champion. So you were doing the two champions in the cities, and granted it was the babyface Piper, but it was Piper winning those non-title matches with Flair.
Hmm.
So, I mean, he stuck to his guns and it was Piper.
We'll let you in, just it'll be non-title.
Yeah, that's what they would do. Hmm. So, I mean, Piper, he had a lot of power, and the promoters, they bent over for Piper. So that was how this ended, Roddy Piper getting the big win. And realistically, you can look at this as one of, if not the best matches of Roddy Piper's career.
Hmm.
You know, you don't get to see too much of his stuff from Los Angeles and all the stuff with Buddy Rose and Portland. It's very scattered, those tape libraries. But this is, you know, one of the big matches of his career, no doubt.
Yeah. A lot of blood, very hot crowd.
Crowd was so great,
mm-hmm.
as was, you know, par for the course for a lot of these. So it was after this that I felt terrible for these two, because they had to do like a dozen more of these dog collar matches throughout the rest of November and December. And then early January was when Piper left. He went to the WWF, and he started off as a manager in the WWF.
Because of his ear troubles?
Well, that's what he always said, but he worked tons of matches in December afterwards with Valentine. So I don't know if he legitimately did more damage during those matches, and maybe coming into the WWF, they might have just pegged him as being a heel manager. Because he was not your prototypical top heel. I mean, he was a guy that, I mean, years later, he testified the fact he was on steroids, but not having that kind of body that you would necessarily associate with it. He wasn't a giant guy. So he was just such a great talker, though. That was evident, you know, way before he ever got there. And our next bit that we'll look at was the infamous coconut angle from March of 1984, which was in Hamburg, Pennsylvania. And this angle actually didn't air nationally until June of that year. And it took place in, as I said, Hamburg, Germany. And, I mean, the interview is essentially, it's a Roddy Piper monologue with Jimmy Snuka essentially just there as an observer.
We should just talk even a bit about the Piper's Pit and how that came to be a thing in the WWE. I mean, it was obviously something original for its time, combining that talk show element within pro wrestling storytelling. And, I watching these early ones makes me really wonder how much of a script they did have to work off of, because clearly a lot of it was improvised.
Yeah. I mean, they had tried out a similar segment with Buddy Rogers, but Piper is the one that everyone remembers as kind of the launching point of these interview-style segments. And, yeah, it was essentially just Piper being able, because he wasn't wrestling on television, and this was his forum on TV where he got himself over very quick, just berating opponents, talking down to people, and this was the first major angle on a Piper's Pit segment, which would then be the host of a lot of big segments, setting up WrestleMania 3, for instance. But here it was, you know, again, a common theme throughout Piper's heel runs was just hitting that race button super hard. I mean, this was just, he hands the mic over for Jimmy Snuka to speak, and he wants him to feel at home here on Piper's Pit. So he's got a bag full of fruit, and he shows him a pineapple, comparing it to the women on the Fiji Islands with the hair and the round bodies. He's got bananas, and he brings out some coconuts, and I thought this was subtle, and I don't know if it was even on purpose, but he dropped the coconut so that it made the big sound that you could see. This was a legitimate coconut. Hmm. This sounded like a heavy object, just to get this across. And then he says he needs a tree here so that Jimmy Snuka, the monkey, can climb the tree. Hmm. Verbiage that might not get over in the Be a Star era.
I definitely don't think so.
So,
but again, like, I mean, this is coming off of all that Hogan stuff. But again, I feel like the need to reiterate. It's one thing when you're saying this in character, on TV, in front of, you know, directly in front of your subject. It's another when you're out of character and being caught saying this in private.
I'm not comparing the two. I'm also not saying that they would ever put a segment like this on television today, even done as a, you know, under the guise of entertainment.
Yeah.
So anyway, he Jimmy Snuka with his like one line of the whole thing after all this. He's called names. He's being berated for his heritage. He says, "Brother, you trying to make fun of me? Are you trying to make fun of me?" And Piper says, "No, no." And as Snuka looks down, he cracks him over the head with the coconut. And everyone looks at the coconut as the big thing. That was not what made this segment. It was Snuka free-falling through the set where he's falling down, possibly to his death.
Yeah.
That made this.
Mm-hmm.
Had it just been the coconut and he went down, I argue this would not be a memorable segment. No, this was chaotic.
Yeah.
More coconuts. You want to be a big shot. You want to call it. Wait a second. Bananas and coconuts. You want to be a big shot. You know what? The only thing I didn't get a tree for you to climb up and down like a monkey, like you want to do. You want to be a big shot? I'll get you a tree next time. You want a banana? Have a banana. What do you want, man? The big...
Am I making fun of you?
Whoa. No, sir.
That was what sold this for me. And
that cheap set of basically three boards painted.
And just reveals, like, you know, it's like looking behind the curtain.
It's great.
It's like a high school gym we're essentially in. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a little bit higher than that here in Hamburg, PA. But Piper then just squashes a banana in his face, whips him with a belt, and then Piper hightails it through this door and locks it as Snuka lost his mind.
That part was amazing. Apparently Snuka was concussed here, they describe.
Wouldn't have surprised me. I mean, a coconut. Have you ever been hit with a coconut? I'll do it to you sometime. It sucks.
No thanks. But the best part was here, Piper goes through some door, and as Snuka comes to, Snuka does like a Hulk impersonation, basically, where he just like goes ah, and as he charges Piper's just holding this door open, and as Snuka comes approaches right into it, Piper closes it right in on him.
Like, brother,
I thought this made Snuka look really stupid, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how you could still cheer for this baby face after this. He looked really dumb.
Well, you also have to – Jimmy Snuka was such a beloved baby face, in particular in 1984. I mean, he is somebody that – had this guy been able to keep himself cleaner, he could have been such a gigantic star in the WWF that he never became. And that was his own issues. But, I mean, he had his success in Japan – and he was a massive babyface at this time. And here he is just being bullied and wronged. And you saw him just raging at this guy, Roddy Piper. So what came out of this was a series of matches that they took around the whole Northeast. They actually aired this angle just in St. Louis earlier in May of that year, because that was where the first match was going to take place. And then after it ran nationally in June, they took the match all over the place. And they showed Piper, at least on the segment I watched, they showed his response to this on TNT on Tuesday Night Titans, where he calls himself the Legend Destroyer, a title that would later be bestowed upon his running mate's son, Cowboy Bob Orton. And Vince is just pissed at Piper. And Lord Alfred Hayes says that Roddy Piper adds nothing to this program, and Piper slaps Lord Alfred Hayes and walks off. And their first singles match that they did coming off this angle, it did over 10,000 people in St. Louis, so at least responded to the initial angle. And then they, as we said, would take it all over the place. But certainly, you know, if it's not, I would say it's probably the most famous Piper's Pit segment that he ever did, the one that is most remembered. And they tried to redo this. I don't know if you watched this extra on the Piper disc, where they tried to do this during his return in 2003, where he hit Rikishi with a coconut that, I swear to God, I don't even remember. And Piper basically said he didn't want to do it. It just trivialized the first one. And it was like, they asked me to do it, so I did it. But it's like, what was the point? And probably no one remembers it. The next angle, which was a huge one to set up everything that would happen, was the gold record that was presented to Captain Lou Albano. And Cyndi Lauper has this gold record that she's going to present to the WWF and all of its fans. They've got Dick Clark in the ring, Hulk Hogan is there, David Wolf, the women's champion Wendi Richter, and they also have a gold record that they're going to present to Captain Lou Albano, because after Cyndi Lauper and Albano had their huge feud, they were now both on the same page, and they were working together, and they raised over $4 million to fight multiple sclerosis. So Piper and Cowboy Bob Orton appear in the ring, and Piper takes Albano's gold record, and he takes credit for setting this entire thing up, and then cracks the record over Albano's head. He might as well have shot this man in broad daylight, the way these fans reacted to this. I mean, this was just treason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to, like, picture the equivalent of the scene today and that level of celebrity, you know, and I'm trying to think who it would be. I don't know, it would be like a...
Like Taylor Swift in the ring with, right. I don't know, who...
Sure, Taylor Swift.
With Bray Wyatt taking...
With Bray Wyatt. As
well, I'm trying to think of a heel that would work in the same... Okay, Seth Rollins is our big heel.
Okay.
Playing the Piper role.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
I mean, you would have to have, like, a beloved figure to play the Albano role. And, I mean, there's very few of them. Like, Jerry Lawler?
Yes, sure.
He could be the figure. Which is funny, because Lawler in Ultimate Warrior did this identical angle with, like, the painting, where Warrior came out wearing his baseball cap. It was not as well remembered as this one.
But it looked like pandemonium, and that wasn't even, like, the biggest thing. I thought, I mean, the record smashing was a big thing, but as soon as Cyndi Lauper went to check on Lou Albano, covered Lou Albano as Piper took his boot and lifted Cyndi Lauper off of him, and essentially kind of kicked her. And this, I think, was probably even more talked about than the record smash.
Yes. I mean, with Cyndi Lauper actually doing physicality, even to a small degree, I mean, it shows you just how little they had to do and what massive traction they got out of it, because these fans were outraged.
Well, the idea that, you know, this grown 200-pound man would lay a finger or touch at all, you know, a tiny little girl, much less a beloved celebrity, I think was probably... It's still kind of not expected today.
And then David Wolf, who was the manager involved with Lauper, he gets slammed by Piper, who just... It looked so awkward, which I think added to it, that it was like, this is not some typical just pick the guy up and slam him on the mat. I mean, it looked like he was just throwing David Wolf like a sack of garbage.
And I would assume it was probably at a time, too, where, you know, maybe the body slam probably meant a bit more than today. Like, I think about the most recent occurrence of something like this, and I think about that Machine Gun Kelly thing with Kevin Owens.
Oh, yeah.
And
wow, did that go nowhere?
No, they went nowhere with that, unfortunately.
Man, you're right.
But anytime a celebrity gets any type of physical interaction with a pro wrestler, gets attacked, it's a major, major thing.
And look how much they had to do with Machine Gun Kelly to get that reaction out of people.
Yeah.
As compared to this, just a simple little kick.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's going nuts. Hogan tends to them, and this was just a chaotic scene.
People throwing things at Piper as he's leaving the
ring. Oh, the heat was incredible at Madison Square Garden for this.
Dick Clark looking scared to death inside.
And it was just great. And this set up the war to settle the score. The singles match, the first one involving Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper.
You really had, you know, almost the perfect foil to the rock and roll, rock and wrestling connection here. A guy who plays bagpipes, you know, wants really nothing to do with pro wrestling and just seems like somebody who would want nothing to do with the MTV generation.
And just would run down MTV in his promos. He used to call it music to vomit over.
Mm-hmm.
You're perfect. Just hates all these kids and their music. He was great.
And it really was like an incredible way to keep that celebrity involvement going in their programming.
Yeah, and you look at this at the time, and you knew they were planning for WrestleMania at the end of March. And on the surface, you would have thought, well, Hogan-Piper, that should be your match. And instead, they had a much bigger idea incorporating more celebrity involvement. And the war to settle the score, there is no way to downplay the success of this show. I mean, MTV had just launched. The WWF was just starting their national expansion. And with MTV growing, they were able to latch onto pro wrestling, and pro wrestling benefited from that exposure. And this show did a 9.1 rating on MTV. This was a record for I don't know how long. It was an incredible success. And I just thought everything about this was so great. The live bagpipe band coming out to play Piper to the ring. They did this at WrestleMania, and I just thought it was so cool. The first time I ever saw WrestleMania, to me, it was Piper's entrance was my favorite part of that entire thing. And Piper comes out wearing this Hulk Hogan shirt, and he's got an electric guitar that you just know is not long for this world, alongside Bob Orton Jr., who's wearing a sling. So if you want to trace the origins, it would happen later in this match where he would need the cast that would just be his.
Do you know how he injured it prior to this?
He worked on the undercard, and they just did a deal where he was putting a sling, and then they did they did the spot in the match where Hogan just nails it into the turnbuckle, and that was one of the most remembered parts of the Cowboy Bob Orton character. Gorilla Monsoon and Gene Okerlund, they were on commentary for this match, and Bob Costas was brought in to do the in-ring introductions. And this was at a time when he was a massive pro wrestling fan and would later grow to just, he had the famous interview with Vince McMahon in 2001 and would very much distance himself from pro wrestling years later. And Piper destroys the guitar, just incredible heat. I mean, if you are just a modern pro wrestling fan of the last 10 years, it's heat you cannot really replicate in too many instances. It's very rare, you know, like a major CMLL event, you kind of get that. But I mean, this crowd was just, God, did they hate Piper, and they loved Hulk Hogan.
Okay, I cannot hear myself even think. For the capacity crowd on hand, the champion is just, what is this?
Mr. T.
There has just been
Hogan comes out to Eye of the Tiger, along with Cyndi Lauper, David Wolfe, and Lou Albano. And Hogan shakes hands with Mr. T, who is spotted in the front row.
Just as a fan.
Just wanted to come watch his Rocky III castmate. And crowds just go nuts for all this as Okerlund brings up the Rocky III connection and establishing it right off the bat. And Piper just charges at Hogan as this starts. And it's just a brawl. He takes down Hogan. And then Hulk Hogan sweeps him into half guard and mounts Roddy Piper. A natural purple belt, at the very least, in 1985. Hogan hits an elbow drop. Piper then reverses an Irish whip and clotheslines Hogan into the corner. Piper applies the sleeper, and Gorilla Monsoon is outraged. He says, that's not a sleeper. That's a choke.
What's the difference? I guess it's on the trachea instead of the...
I guess Gorilla Monsoon was a... We were going to need a gorilla breakdown, maybe, of the difference between the subtleties of a sleeper and a rear naked choke. Hogan's arm goes down twice before he fires up and breaks the sleeper hold. Orton then grabs Hogan, and this is where Hogan smashes the arm into the turnbuckle. Orndorff shows up at ringside, and Piper then punches Hogan, sending him into the ref, who's knocked out instantly. Paul Orndorff comes off the top with a knee drop to Hogan, and they're double-teaming Hogan. Cyndi Lauper gets on the apron to come to Hogan's aid, and then Mr. T jumps up, and this crowd is just so loud at the idea Mr. T is going to get involved. And he turns around Piper and attacks Mr. T from behind. They double-team with stomps. Hogan gets up, and there's this big two-on-two stare-down as Piper and Orndorff hightail it. But then security and police separate them all in the ring. It's just an insane scene, which Gene Okerlund summarizes perfectly with the question, what happened to our match? This was just a chaotic scene to set up the main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah, it looked fantastic. I try to, like, think about how it would work today. And we almost kind of saw it as a very similar occurrence at Mania this year with The Rock and Ronda Rousey. And this, I thought, was obviously way bigger than even, you know, what that turned out to be. I thought it was just a great setup for WrestleMania with all the celebrity involvement, and I think it would work today still with the right players.
And that set up WrestleMania, which was 6 weeks after the war to settle the score, Hulk Hogan and Mr. T against Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff at Madison Square Garden. There were 400,000 people that watched this on closed circuit, and it really wasn't until the last couple of days with the promotion, Hogan and Mr. T going on Saturday Night Live the night prior, that this thing truly did click. And I mean, it's been discussed a lot over the past week with the passing of Piper. I mean, just the key players and their role in this, Hogan, Mr. T, and Roddy Piper, and all were such huge contributors to this thing clicking. And had all of the celebrities out there, Billy Martin, Liberace, Muhammad Ali was out there as the outside enforcer referee, which Gorilla Monsoon did note is just as important as the referee on the inside, which is probably not true. Hmm. Pat Patterson, the referee inside. And again, we got the live bagpipes for Roddy Piper, Orndorff, and Orton's entrance. And Piper just walks out with this incredible swagger, this guy that just knows everybody here hates him. And he was just, to me, his entrance, this is one of my favorite entrances, is watching this guy come out at WrestleMania 1. And they did on the network dub over Eye of the Tiger as we got Real American pumped over here for Hogan's entrance with Mr. T and Jimmy Snuka. And then Gorilla Monsoon says, and I quote, or sorry, this was Jesse Ventura who said, "The greatest in wrestling history is taking place right now." Right now. The double emphasis, which great minds always emphasize. No, there's no amount, there's no limitation on how many times you can say that.
You could be governor someday.
Piper then tags in Hogan. They milked everything for what it was worth at the beginning of this match before they even touched.
Yeah.
Piper wanting in with Hogan, and then Mr. T wanting in, and then it starts off with Piper and T, where Piper just takes his back and Mr. T goes down, he sits out, and tosses Piper off.
On the documentary, Piper talks a lot about this, about how, you know, he didn't think Mr. T should be doing much more besides amateur wrestling because he probably couldn't make anything else look convincing. But Mr. T did have an amateur wrestling background, so Piper's idea was to decide to pretty much go all amateur wrestling when he was in there with Mr. T.
And Mr. T lifted him up at one point. It segued into this big brawl with everybody getting involved. And then this allowed Muhammad Ali to get his big spot in, where he throws a punch at Piper, sends him to the floor, and then chases Orton out. And then they cut to Billy Martin just laughing at all of this. A poor cutaway shot. The heels leave for the back, but Hogan stops Pat Patterson from counting, and the police bring Piper and Orndorff back to the ring. It is illegal to do a count-out finish here. Mr. T then slams Piper, hip-tosses Orndorff as the crowd's going nuts for him. Orndorff sends Hogan to the floor from behind, and Piper then attacks him with a chair. Mr. T runs in to help, even though he's the illegal man, as they're double-teaming Hogan. He hits a double atomic drop, tags in and out as Hogan is selling. Orndorff climbs to the top and misses with an elbow drop, allowing Hogan to tag Mr. T, and then they start double-teaming Mr. T, as Monsoon says that Mr. T isn't trying to get out of the front face lock the proper way, and he's hoping that Hulk Hogan has taught him the proper way to get out of a front face lock, and then immediately Mr. T escaped. So Gorilla Monsoon underselling the skills of one Mr. T. He tags in Hogan. Orton then comes in. Snuka headbutts Orton out. Everyone's fighting. Orndorff then has Hogan in a full Nelson, and Bob Orton returns, coming off the top, and nails Orndorff in the head with the cast as Hogan gets out of the full Nelson and then pins Orndorff in 13 minutes and 23 seconds.
Yeah, we reviewed this whole show in the past, so I've seen this match before, but I've probably seen it a few times. But I think this time, getting to watch it with a better understanding of the context, you know, watching it right after that war to settle the score, I really do think it can't be overstated how important these matches were and this feud was to the success of the industry. I mean, it just looked like this crowd was just so intense for both of these shows, and it really felt like wrestling was like everybody's favorite party at this time.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hugely successful show for the company and took them to that next level and was kind of the really exclamation point to this national expansion that they had been working on. And coming out of that, I mean, Roddy Piper and Mr. T would then do the boxing match a year later, and it was at that point that Roddy was just at a level where the crowd was turning Piper. You could hear the cheers during the WrestleMania 2 match, and would then move over into the babyface role, and that's where he largely remained for the rest of his career.
Piper really did not have many nice things to say about Mr. T in his documentary, talking about that match in particular and how he seems to really regret it because he says it looked awful.
Yeah, he's always brought that up with Mr. T, and part of that, I don't doubt, is still that old-school mentality of Roddy Piper where, okay, all of this stuff was, you know, planned out, but this thing was real with Mr. T. And if you remember at WrestleMania 30, they actually did a segment backstage, and it was pretty goofy, where they had Hogan and Piper along with Orndorff and Mr. T, even Pat Patterson with the bow tie and the referee outfit to recreate that WrestleMania 1 scene. And they all begrudgingly shake hands with one another, including Piper and Mr. T. And I guess the Mr. T stuff, that was always what Piper brought up, that the two didn't get along and it was really difficult to work with him. And kind of what you mentioned, just this outsider coming in and Piper wanting to protect the business. But Mr. T, you can't downplay how big a role he played in WrestleMania 1. He was a gigantic celebrity at this point in time in 1985. Mm-hmm. And at that point, of course, he did the match with Adrian Adonis at WrestleMania 3, where that was positioned as his retirement. He went off. He did They Live. Hell Comes to Frogtown. Was looking at a new career in film, and then would come back in 1989. He did a lot of programs, did commentary at that point, and our next match we're going to look at was when he was going to be departing the company for the next time, and that was coming out of WrestleMania 8, which was April the 5th of 1992, which was just 2 months after Roddy Piper won his first title in the WWF, winning the Intercontinental title from the Mountie at the Rumble in 92, and then defending it against Bret Hart, and both had gone in as babyfaces to this one, but it was Piper playing heel in this particular match.
I don't even know so much about that, you know? Like, it seemed like both were babyfaces, but having to resort to that heel edge to give them the advantage. I mean, definitely in the pre-match promo here, it was a great pre-match promo with I think it was it Okerlund?
Okerlund.
Okerlund in the back conducting the interview with both Piper and Bret. And Piper here talks about the history Piper and respect Piper has for Bret's family, but then goes on to talk about how he remembers Bret, you know, being a little baby, says he knows Bret wasn't potty trained until he was 7, and then Piper just goes off, and he was just very funny there. So he definitely took more of a heel stance in the interview, but in the match, it was definitely Bret doing more of the heel mannerisms.
Well, WrestleMania 8, it was certainly the company had certainly, this was far removed from the big boom period of the 80s. However, this show, it still did 47,000 people paid.
It was a stadium. It looked incredible.
Yeah, at the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, there were probably about 62,000 or so actually in the building, so it still looked like a giant spectacle for WrestleMania. And they went through the backstage interview, and then we have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan on commentary. And right at the start of this, it's Piper with the takedown, very similar to how he started it off with Mr. T. And, of course, Bret has his amateur wrestling background as well.
That's right.
And
man, who is this referee? This was all I could look at.
Oh, this referee, I mean, familiar, but I don't know the name off the top of my head. Not one of the more familiar referees.
The bowl cut and this mustache was certainly...
it was 1992, right?
Never seen a referee look like
this. We'll have to ask Corderas, this particular ref.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was the classic bow tie look for the company. And then Hart sends him off to the floor, use like a hip escape, and... Piper just comes back and shoves him.
Yeah, that's when they're trying to convey that, okay, this is a little friendly match, but things get heated now.
And Hart grabs hold of the left arm of Piper and doesn't let go, puts it into a hammer lock, and then Hart hits a drop kick and is grabbing his right shoulder in pain and selling that he's messed up his shoulder, and instead it's just Brett playing possum for this small package that he gets a two count off of. And Brett would do that spot sporadically. I always thought it was great, where he would just try to outsmart the guy, where he's really hurt, and it's just a playing possum spot. Mm. I always enjoyed that. He then runs at Piper, and they go over the top to the floor together. And Hart is back in the ring, and the referee points out that his boot's untied and leans over to go look at his boot, and Piper sucker punches him, and Hart blades off of this sucker punch, which was a big thing at the time because there was a no-blood policy at this point in time. And on this show, Brett and Ric Flair both did color. Flair just said, well, yeah, of course I did color. It's a big match. And he got in a lot of shit for it. And Brett was like, I didn't blade. That was a legit shot. And it was years later that Brett said, yeah, of course I bladed. But, I mean, he bladed off. It wasn't kind of a spot you look at, like just this little punch.
Yeah.
And Hart went down from it, and he just said, yeah, he just caught me.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell watching this.
I mean, Brett was really good at being able to disguise blade jobs. So Hart's just bleeding from this. And, you know, I can see the mentality that for this kind of a match that they thought blood might add to it. I don't know if it necessarily was necessary, but they must have felt it was. So you've got the blood, and I guess everyone watching this and in the arena was aware of this, with the exception of Gorilla Monsoon, who it took him the longest time before he might be busted open. What's that from? And he, at one point he thought it was off of Piper hitting a bulldog to him, and Piper is attacking him, and then a forearm sends Piper to the floor. They do a double clothesline spot. Hart then stops Piper on the top, pulls him by the hair, driving him face first into the mat. Hart's offense just looked so good. I thought that these two, they worked so well together. They went through a series of two counts. Piper blocked the sharpshooter. He got the boot up as Hart came off the second turnbuckle. And then Piper sends Brett into Way's favorite referee, knocking him out, and then clotheslines Hart to the floor. They sends Hart into the steps, and then Piper gets the ring bell. And Bobby Heenan is just yelling for Piper to use it. He says, Piper is going to ring his bell. And Piper holds the bell up, getting ready to strike down the bloodied Brett. But then he tosses it away after looking to the crowd and having second thoughts about resorting to such dirty tactics. And Heenan is beside himself here.
Heenan was like shouting for Piper to bring him the bell so that he could use it. It was a great scene in a great moment because Piper was like, it required a lot of acting and it required a lot of like skill in being able to do it without seeming overly cheesy but still being able to convey that to a live audience. And I thought Piper did a great job here, as did Brett, who was great at looking completely helpless as this man stood above him.
Heenan's line was, what the hell, use the bell. And then Piper applies a sleeper instead of using the bell. And the referee gets back up, and Hart then kicks off the turnbuckle, rolling on top of Piper to get the pinfall at 13 minutes and 50 seconds. The little thing in this that I really liked was they didn't immediately play Brett's music. They waited for Howard Finkel to announce him as the new champion, and you got that extra pop at the end when they officially announced the new champion. They play Brett's music, and Piper places the title onto Brett, helping him up. And this would turn out to be Piper's last match for over 2 years with the company. He did a few more Piper's pits after this, and then he disappeared to go back to movies, and this was in the heat of all the steroid allegations, and he was someone that actually got subpoenaed during that trial. And so the last of Roddy Piper for a long time, and key here because this was a rare televised Roddy Piper loss. And Brett, and you know, in the last week he's talked heavily about this match and thinking that, you know, there were a lot of guys in the company that didn't see Brett at that top level. Piper made him in this match, and there were a lot of other guys that weren't willing to put him over, and Piper did it clean here at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great match. I remember as a kid just loving this match.
Yeah, this is I mean I'm more partial to this type of style, and like Brett's my favorite guy anyway, so I thought this was probably the best match Piper's of all the ones that we watched. I just thought it was a great example of how to make a double babyface match creatively compelling. I thought there were a lot of subtle storylines within the body of this match that they had to convey, and I thought Piper's acting in particular was really good. You know, the idea that needing to cheat against a friend because I had no other choice to win, and then ultimately deciding not to do it because of whatever history the two had. I thought it could have all turned out very corny, like pro wrestling acting often does, but Piper, I thought, was able to convey it all very believably.
So, I mean, the timeline here of Piper from WWF to our next match, which would be in WCW, in terms of the wrestling side, it's pretty quick. He made a random appearance at SummerSlam that year at Wembley Stadium, just playing the bagpipes. It was very random. He did the match with Jerry Lawler in 94, which he pretty much disregarded on his on the documentary. I mean, just saying that it was a bad match, it was a bad angle, and just didn't see any reason to stick around. So it was just that one match in 94 he did. And then he would resurface in WCW.
Well, he did the whole Gold Dust feud.
Oh, sorry, yeah. We should. He came back in 96 when Gorilla Monsoon was taken out in that angle with Vader, and he did the interim president deal and was inserted into that match at WrestleMania 12 with Gold Dust, which is just a violent match.
It resulted in him getting run over by a car.
Yes.
And it also resulted in a Bronco chase in L.A.
Yes, and I mean, they've talked about the idea that they wanted to try and get O.J. Simpson to do that WrestleMania. I don't know how serious it was, but what a horrible idea that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that was a match that, I mean, extremely violent, just watching these guys murder each other in this particular match. And yes, the Bronco chase. So after that, he would leave the WWF and then go to WCW. He showed up at Halloween Havoc that year after Hulk Hogan had defeated Randy Savage in the main event. And Piper just cut this babyface promo running down Hogan, saying that I've always been just as famous as you. You've never beaten me. And the funny part was Piper just went on, and they went past the pay-per-view window, so it got cut off.
Oh, no.
And he just went on forever. But it did create the big match for Starrcade at the end of the year, and this show did really well on pay-per-view. It was their biggest number in like a year and a half plus. Non-title match, though, which I remember at the time, Piper won the match, and there was all this confusion because everyone just assumed it was a title match, but we needed Gordon Solie to clarify after non-title match after Piper got the clean win.
That was not clarified beforehand.
I'm sure it was mentioned, but it was very much hidden. It was not hitting you over the head. They did not want to really promote their big match as being non-title. Right. I won't say it was never mentioned, but I certainly remember as a fan going into this thinking it was a non-title match.
You mean the title?
Sorry, title match. So it took place in Nashville, Tennessee in December of 96.
Pretty much a decade later. I mean, 12 years later. 12,
yes.
13 years later after.
And, yeah, the story was 11? This was the one guy Hogan wasn't able to beat. I guess you could throw an Ultimate Warrior, which was another win he would eventually get back. Michael Buffer announces this, saying this could be the match of the century. And Hogan comes out with DiBiase, Elizabeth, and Vincent, who has his own ties to Roddy Piper in the WWF during that time when Piper had hurt himself with the motorcycle accident, and he was Virgil's kind of mouthpiece during the feud with Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, I thought it was just, to see this, you really do get a sense that, I mean, 90s WCW was... 80s WWF.
Well, this main event certainly hit that hard. I mean, like everybody down to Virgil and Elizabeth here. Mm-hmm. So the crowd, though, they were so into Roddy Piper, chanting for Roddy. I mean, this was kind of right when WCW was getting regular coverage in Canada, where it wasn't super hard to get their television. I mean, you could get Saturday Night, but you needed a cable package for it. And so this was when I had started watching mm-hmm. Nitro each week. And the NWO angle had kicked off in the prior summer. And this was like the first really big singles match involving Hogan as a heel mm-hmm. that year. So the crowd was great here, chanting for Piper, and just a huge reaction when Piper landed these punches, sending Hogan to the floor, and Hogan just doing all the heel tactics, constantly stalling. There was a headlock that Piper wouldn't let go of, and then knocks Piper to the floor, and Hogan would just keep bailing whenever Piper got in control. Piper whipped him over and over with his belt at ringside, and then DiBiase grabs the foot of Piper, distracting him, and Hogan would attack Piper from behind to get the advantage. There was an abdominal stretch, which was maybe the high point of a Hogan's offense during the entire match, playing off Piper's hip replacement. And then Piper yanks him by the hair. Dusty Rhodes, who's on commentary, basically says both here are gassed. And Hogan misses the leg drop. Piper gets up and attacks the leg as the Giant appears, lifts up Roddy Piper for the choke slam, and clearly this was designed for him not to take the choke slam. But then a fan runs in, so referee Randy Anderson and Hogan are dealing with the fan as Giant is just holding Roddy Piper up in the air for an eternity as they take care of the fan. Then the choke slam is stopped and the Giant is sent to the floor, and Piper applies a sleeper. Hogan goes down, and then Anderson lifts up Hogan's arm for the three. And Hogan's arm goes down, and Piper wins. 15 minutes and 36 seconds.
Yeah, the finish felt really weird, and
not a finish you're accustomed to ever seeing. Like it's the cliche babyface comeback spot with the three arms.
And it was made especially weird because of that fan run in right at the most inopportune time in the match. I thought, you know, it just really went to shit at that point. The Giant comes in and the fan runs in, and they do that whole finishing sequence as the fan is being taken out. So the audience's attention is only on that fan. Meanwhile, the Piper applies a sleeper, and it doesn't really get that big of a reaction. I thought this match was okay.
The crowd overcompensated for what the two lacked physically.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting about it, though, especially watching it as part of a review like this, is, you know, here you get to see basically the two of them, Hogan and Piper, do a role reversal from what they had at the War to Settle the Score here, with Hogan playing a fun heel, you know, especially seeing him play, like, the most quintessential babyface at WrestleMania 1. To see him, you know, do a lot of the heel things that Piper did in that match, like complaining, like running out of the ring and threatening to leave. It was fun to see these two people.
The police didn't escort Hogan back to the ring at Starrcade.
Well, that was the other thing, was that this felt like a match that was appropriate for the 80s, but in the 90s, with far less heat, far less celebrity involvement, and probably at a time when work rate was at least at a bit higher level of expectation.
Yeah, but I mean, to WCW and Eric Bischoff's credit at that time, yes, a lot of these main eventers were physically past their peaks, mm-hmm. respectively, and you can add that to numerous guys. However, they're changing things up, and fans still wanted to see these guys mm-hmm. compete, and it was a lot of stars they grew up on. Now they were in different roles. There was still mileage, even though physically they weren't at where they were 10, 15 years ago. And, I mean, it's a weird comparison, but I mean, it's kind of the formula we see with Bellator now, where it's fighters that are past their peak that still have a lot of value mm-hmm. to fans that grew up watching these fighters. And at least in 96, this was a match that connected, and it did very well on pay-per-view.
What was the follow-up coming out of this with Hogan losing?
They did the rematch at Super Brawl, which was a much worse match, and Hogan got the win in that particular match. And then they do another one at Halloween Havoc the following year. And Piper, I mean, he stuck around with WCW for a while. This was kind of the high point, I would say, of his WCW run, was this first program with Hogan. And then he went through many different incarnations, various feuds, many of which I think he was used too much. He was a guy that should have been used very sporadically. And then they tried to turn him heel in 1999, where Ric Flair had also turned heel. He was the heel president of WCW, and Piper was made his heel vice president, which at the time, the Phantom Menace had just come out, so they gave Piper the nickname RPVP.
Oh my God.
A horrible nickname. And then they tried to recreate the Montreal Screwjob at the end of 1999, where Piper was the crooked referee that screwed Bill Goldberg begrudgingly because he was going along with the Booker, Vince Russo. It was not a positive time.
None of that was on the DVD.
None of that made it. And it's amazing to look back at. You know, he was a significant chunk. He was there in WCW. I mean, he was largely stopped being used by the end of 99, and then his contract would end in 2000 with the company. But he just glazes over his WCW time. It did not seem like a very memorable time for Piper's career.
Right.
And then kind of, I mean, was largely out of the scene until he showed up in TNA in 2002 for an utterly bizarre interview with Vince Russo, where he accused him in the ring of killing Owen Hart. Then he would return to WWE in WrestleMania 19 and did the short run again as a heel with Sean O'Hare before the HBO segment aired in June, where they announced that they were in contract negotiations to renew with Piper, and they were ceasing negotiations with Piper.
This was addressed in the DVD.
Yes.
This infamous HBO interview, and it was especially chilly to watch this because, you know, the clip that they showed from it was of Piper talking about all his friends passing away at a young age and nobody doing anything about it.
Yeah, and, you know, typically those in wrestling, when these segments air, like, naturally people in the industry, they get defensive when anyone on the outside is taking a critical view. I mean, look at Dana White's tweet, as innocuous as that tweet was, and how up-in-arms wrestlers got at some outsider criticizing our industry. I think there was a lot of that with that HBO Real Sports piece, which I rewatched over the weekend. And yeah, Roddy Piper, he was working with WWE when this interview was filmed, I'll say a month or so before it aired. So he was with WWE at the time, and he was pretty blunt about his thoughts on things, but let's look at the track record from 2003. There were a whole lot more deaths after that, and he kind of he had this point of view that what's going on here? Like, this was a real big problem, and I really don't buy that, hey, this was out of context or Piper was in a dark place in his life.
Which is how they
No, wrestling was in a kind of dark place at this time.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was in 2003 where the WWE was, they did not have a drug testing policy in place. Their policy was, if we suspect that there's a problem, we'll test some guys. But it's not like they were doing regular testing of guys. And there was lots of stuff going on at this time. And there were a lot of deaths and a lot of needless ones. And, yeah, there was the quote in the Real Sports piece about Piper saying, let's be honest, I'm not going to make it to 65. And, you know, he died at 61. So that was the chilling comment that a lot of people have gone back and, you know, have brought up over the past couple of days. But that was went into the Hall of Fame in 2005 and largely would pop up pretty regularly every now and then on WWE programming for the last couple of decades. A lot of Piper's pit segments, I think, from 2009 onwards where he was really good when he was brought in for key segments. He kind of got into this. He understood what the story was, and he could be very compelling.
Yeah, one of the last ones I remember was one of the Cena programs.
Cena as a. It was when he was under control of Nexus, right. And it was going to be Orton and Barrett with Cena as the referee, and it was just like it wasn't a big main event program, but on the final show before the pay-per-view, Piper did a Piper's Pit, and he did this great outline of the history of this title and how horrible it would be, John Cena, if you helped this guy because you're under duress and messing with the lineage and the people that have held this title. It was an awesome promo. And then, of course, there was going into WrestleMania 25 with Jericho. I mean, his last number over the last few years, he could be very compelling in that role. So that will wrap things up. We will get to your feedback in just a second. But before we do so, the last time we had Roddy Piper on the show, it was in March of 2011, where we talked about that promo from going into the Survivor Series of the prior year. And we also discussed the first WrestleMania and many other topics. So here is Roddy Piper on the Law in March of 2011.
You mentioned doing the Piper's Pit. I mean, I think that would be awesome because, I mean, last year at Survivor Series, that promo that you did on the old school Raw show, I mean, that totally got Cena's match over to a new level. I honestly, Roddy, I thought that was one of the best promos of your entire career.
Well, that's very kind. Well, you know, I guess it just came from the heart. You know, I just did a thing, the Jimmy Kimmel show a couple days ago.
Right.
And with
the Miz.
Champion, The Miz, which I assume stands for miserable. have you been around him? No.
No.
I got to give credit where credit's due. No, I'm serious. We did a piece of business, and there's this, you know, Legends game coming out, or that's out. And he wanted to go toe-to-toe a little bit. And you know what? He's a talented kid. I didn't know it.
Yeah, well, the thing about him, Roddy, is that he kind of had to pay his dues in front of the cameras. He didn't have the benefit that you guys had of being able to work the territories for 10 years to build up your craft. And when he first started, he wasn't so good, but I think he's turned into a really solid performer.
Yeah, I think when I say good, and you know, because all of them, they're all great. I love them all. You know, I'm on their side, you know that. But you know, there was a couple of times where I went to different places, you know, in volume or intensity or whatever that I was doing, and he kind of jumped right in there and was a force of his own to reckon with. And, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. I know that people aren't really wild about him, but, you know, they're not wild about me either. So, you know, but I just need to give credit where credit's due. I was impressed with him. I don't know if he's going to beat Cena or not, but...
I think it should be an entertaining match, but I mean, really, the focus is what's going to happen with Rock. I mean, the TV ratings have been up ever since Rock came back. The shows are selling out live. I mean, people are really excited to see the Rock come back.
Well, you know, and they should be. The guy, you know what? I don't really know the guy. I don't think I've met him. I'm not positive. I don't think so. Except when he's a little tiny kid and he tried to steal my shoes when his father brought him in the dressing room.
Well,
I wrestled his grandfather
right
in Hawaii, and I went as the Great Howley and liked to get killed. So, but as far as what the attention he's brought and the way he's carrying himself, I'm real proud of him. He didn't pave the road for Hollywood. I did. However, I'm proud of him. I think that he's doing a great job. But I'd love to go toe-to-toe with him.
He claims that you were a big influence on his promo style.
He says that?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. He should have set his sights a little higher. Think how good he would have been. But you know what? I love this. Here's the part that is sometimes frustrating is, there's so much great new ground to break. And this was one right here with this. And I'm not banging Piper's Pit. Like, I'm trying to get it in there. I'm just kind of fantasizing with you here a little
bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, you know, that's the kind of stuff where I see the WWE universes as being called now. Well, okay, let's make new places.
Yeah.
Go further than we're doing. Let's not flatline and milk toast it. And so, like, if these guys can improv, and we've got all this history, and the fans will know if we're lying or not. That's the coolest part about it, is you can't fool the folks on these things. So you got to go out there and bare your soul. I think we should have more of that.
I agree, but that seems to be one of the problems with why it's not as emotionally involving as it was in your day, Roddy, because they script all the promos now, whereas you guys, you know, were given your bullet points, and you just went out there.
Did I... Was somebody given bullet points?
Oh, I don't know.
No. Okay. I'm mad I didn't get mine. I was stuck with Uncle Elmer in the pit. I had to go out and stop Uncle Elmer's wedding, all right? You know who I had to pep behind the curtain? I had to go, excuse me, Mr. Schwarzenegger, I got to go out and stop a wedding. I'll be right with you. I swear to God.
That's funny.
So Arnold turns aside and I stop a wedding. I'm still thinking that... the things that could be done with the people that are over in the different capacities. You're saying, yeah, because they script everything. But you know what? It's not what you're saying. It's what you put behind it's how you're saying it.
Right.
And so I understand, and I've got all the respect in the world for everybody there. But you know, you can still seize the moment. And that's where I think people have got a little little glove shy. We know we're fighting between PG Entertainment.
Yeah.
Which we're a public company. We're this, we're that, or whatever wrestling is. I'm a Hall of Famer. How am I supposed to carry myself now? I have a responsibility to you, to everybody else. And I'll be damned if I'm going to lay down. I'm going to keep swinging. But in new places where, you know, come on, WWE Universe. Okay. Let's give them something new. And mm-hmm. the only way you can do that is to dare to try.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's your... I agree with you. Every once in a while, one of the guys should take the bull by the horns and just go for it, you know?
Yeah, like, there's... no, you know, nobody told me to slap Mr. T, but it seemed like the thing to do. Now, I'm sure if I had asked first, they would have, no.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I'm not telling anybody to run out and slap somebody or kick Cindy Lauper, but I'm telling you, hey, get the license that you're an artist also. When I was at one of the shows, one of the televisions I've done lately, I just forget which one, and one of the WWE representatives were there. They were trying to say... you know, our guys are so much more than just professional wrestlers now. They're more, and you know what the word they're looking for is? Artists.
Yeah. Well, they just got mad at a newspaper writer this week who wrote a story and said, we're not a wrestling company, we're a global entertainment company, and we don't have wrestling matches, we put on entertainments, and we don't have wrestlers, we have superstars and divas.
Woof. Oh, man. What did you have to tell me that for?
I'm sorry, Roddy. I wanted you to know that.
Wait. The only thing you can't forget, wait one second. You know, the marquee, the old story, the old saying is the marquee says wrestling.
Yes.
The whole thing is built. Why professional, why the WWE Universe is so big is it's built on the very basic foundation that we all understand in life. And that's the struggle between two men or two ladies or whatever it may be.
Right, right.
The struggle, because the fight. That's what it's based on. All the rest of the dressing, I agree, it's wonderful and all the new ventures, but let's not forget where we're born.
Yeah, I agree with you, absolutely.
You know, and we can drift off and we can have that, but nothing's better than a real solid world championship wrestling match. At the end of WrestleMania, you know, it's not what Snooki... And I'm not against Snooki, I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what Snooki, whatever. It's what's going to happen. It's what scene is going to pull out with the Miz. It's how they're going to perform. That's what you're going to remember. It's going to be Undertaker and Triple H.
Yeah.
It's how those boys perform. You got to pull it out now, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it is trim. So I'm not sure I agree completely with that, but I know where they're trying to go.
Yeah. Can we talk about some of your memories of that very first WrestleMania? Because that was a really big gamble for Vince at the time.
I think he had put everything he had on
it. Yeah.
At least that's what we were told at the time, that there was one time when we were getting all within about a week of it, and, you know, the rumor mill was that every dime in the company has gone into this thing. And there was a huge responsibility that wasn't stated that I understood, and maybe one or two others, I'm not sure, is what we do now is going to define us as not only us as pros, myself, and Orndorff and Orton and Hogan, but the entire business in how we handle Mr. T. And it was huge war over it.
Right.
Huge. I mean, vicious. And I wouldn't take a back step for him. Not a chance, because it's wrong. He's not in our business.
That's right. That's right. At the end of WrestleMania, you're still there. He's gone.
And so, that's right. And he wanted to come in and knock heads and do all whatever he thought he was. And I kept it amateur, if you watch. And there was huge fights in the dressing room about this. And going out, and I wasn't going to take a dive for this guy. And so, but what it did was this. What was really cool is when you went out there that night, you felt the tension between the guys. You felt that the crowd could feel the tension. It wasn't a show, per se, to them at that moment, nor was it to us. Because nobody knew, and you got Muhammad Ali was a wild card. You had T as a wild card. They had Patterson in there to try to hoof and stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
They had Snook in one corner, you know, but bottom line is, once I got in there with T, if he started trying to do silly stuff, then it was a defining moment, but everybody held the ground.
Right.
And it got a lot of heat on me back then.
Oh, did it ever. Did it? Yeah, did it ever.
If I only really knew, huh?
Now, now, Roddy, you worked at that a couple years before the first Mania. You worked at that Starcade show, which was really kind of the first big show of that nature. And I just wanted kind of you compare that Starcade show with the first WrestleMania.
Wow. Good one. I try to make it brief. The reason the Starcade show was put on, it was a Civil War thing. It was Jimmy Crockett's and the South's answer to Shea Stadium and Bruno and
Larry Zbysko. Right, right.
So I think they had done like 500 grand or something like that. And so the South wrestling was starting to pop all over, you know, in Atlanta, TBS was getting hot. We were on there, etc. And so okay, and they threw on. It might have been the first pay per view ever. I'm not positive on that. But here's the thing was, because it was the first pay-per-view ever, for us, the matches, I think it was Flair in a cage with Harley and myself with the dog collar.
You and Greg Valentine had that wicked dog collar match, yeah.
So for us, the performance, the amount of guts and pain that was put in to that was really important to us personally, because we knew that we were doing something new here that was getting so much attention on it. And back then, it was still that NWA old school, let's beat each other within a pulp, and that'll make them happy. Isn't that strange?
Mm-hmm.
That's how much dedication those fellas, like, no, go ahead and hurt me. If it gives them their ticket money, that's cool, I'll heal.
Well, I remember seeing a tape of that first Starcade and watching that match with you and Greg Valentine, and I just thought the two of you were insane. It was just like, they're going to kill each other.
I was fighting for my life. I don't know.
No doubt.
And Valentine hits hard no matter. He doesn't need weapons. And he was, you know, Valentine's in his prime then.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The dumb part of that match was Jimmy Crockett asked me to make up a match, and so I did. And the premise of that match was, once you saw it, it was so brutal, you'd come back to see it again. I never thought about a rematch.
Yeah.
I thought I'd only have to do it one time.
That's right.
So, yeah. Actually, just whip this off quick. Inside the dog collars, after I saw what I made, felt sorry for us, and I put sheep's wool inside the dog collars. And after about 15 of those matches, both Valentine and I had a rash, which was an inch and a half long, which is the size of the dog collars, looked like herpes zoster 1112 around our neck. And I'm putting baby powder and diaper rash on. He's wearing turtlenecks. There's one very famous shot, and he's got me down, and he's hammering my ear. And it's bleeding with the chain, and he's screaming at me, and everybody wondered what he said. This is what he was saying. He was so mad at me for putting it, and it was itching. He was going, only a moron would sheep wool in a dog. You know, and I was getting more beat up than that.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah,
now,
things.
Why do you think because those Starcade shows were really fantastic, but they didn't seem to catch on the way WrestleMania did. What's the difference? Is it just because it was based in the South more, or...?
No, I think I gotta, so hurt. I gotta give credit where credit's due. Vince McMahon, the one you guys know here.
Yeah.
You know what, man? The guy's got a knack for that. What all the world looks at America for, that glitz, ba-boom, tinsel town, cymbals blashing, pyrotechnics. He's got a knack for it.
Yeah.
And Kevin Dunn. Yeah, that's been there forever. He knows how to shoot it. They eat it and breathe it, and they just do it better than anybody else I've seen. I got it. Come on. The way the lights are. I would change some of the lighting, but the way the lights are, the way they produced it, they've used all the right colors subliminally.
Yeah, no, that's
a good job of it.
That's true. Now, of all the WrestleManias that you were involved with, is it the first one that you think of as the most special, or is there another one that sticks out as Roddy Piper's shining WrestleMania moment?
Holy cow. The first one, I don't think that you can, even the historians can ever say that you can't beat it.
Yeah.
I don't think you can beat it because, well, again, everything's wild. The celebrities that were there. When I come in Madison Square Garden, first thing I saw was Liberace with the Rockettes. Practicing the can-can. Okay. There we go. Then Little Richard was handing me a Bible, and then Andy Warhol was trying to take pictures of my feet. I kid you not.
Yeah, that's wild.
So, all that going on, and Muhammad Ali being who he was, it's like, holy cow. So the second, maybe the second one that comes to mind was when the cart broke in WrestleMania 3 and I ran down 93,000 people. It was the first time I really looked at them and screaming. And, you know, you can't buy that moment. Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura calling Collar right next to the desk saying, I can't hear a word you're saying, Jesse. I can't hear you, Gorilla. That's, you know, holy cow. That's wonderful. I got a lot of attention for the Bad News Brown one.
Right.
I don't know if I would do it again.
That was yeah, you were half black, half white there.
Thanks
yeah.
for pointing that out. I appreciate the fact that you get a visual on that for everyone.
Well, in case they didn't see it, you know.
No, I agree. That's the law. Yeah. It's the law.
That's it.
that one I got, I guess, the match with Bret Hart.
Right.
You know, that was, the reason that match was different is because I was going in as a champion, the Intercontinental Champion. And when you come in as the champion, you wrestle completely different than any other time that you wrestle.
Right.
But I had never had the opportunity to...
Uh-oh. That sounds like we lost them. Something happened. Hello? Are you there? Roddy, are you there? Oh, okay. Well, John will try and get Roddy back. Something happened there. I don't know. Somebody hit the phone.
Wasn't me.
No. I know. I noticed from the phone. You were playing with your computer.
I did that to Meltzer that one time, and I haven't done it since.
All right. Well, John will just try and get him back. But some great stuff there.
Absolutely.
With Roddy Piper. Very, very. He's in a very good mood tonight.
Yeah.
That's for sure. He's having some fun.
You can tell it's now a very different world from the one that he originally started in. But he is on the line
all
once
right.
again.
Roddy.
So welcome back,
hey, listen,
Roddy Piper.
I got a wife, okay? She hangs up on me. She gets mad at me. Come on. Give me a break here. I love her, but, you know. Hey. Okay, where were we?
What were we talking about? You were talking about the match with Bret Hart and how it's different going in as champion.
Yeah, when you come in to wrestle as the champion, it's a whole different style of wrestling and a whole different psychology to it. And so that's the only time that I went and defended a belt in the WWE arena. And so that's why that match was so much different.
Right.
And that always surprises me. How much it's mentioned.
Yeah.
Bret, of course, is one of the best competitors ever in showman. But that sticks out. I don't know. I liked hitting McMahon over there, Hogan over the head in Seattle.
I liked it when you gave, what's his name, Downey the fire extinguisher.
Downey the fire extinguisher.
I always liked that one.
He was real cocky. I had heard on the airplane that there was a stewardess there, and she had talked to him, and he was on his way. He goes, I don't know. I'll do whatever I want to. I'll just write a script for them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Mr. Downey. Let me get right on that. If you watch that, just a quick one, because I had heard that. We just didn't see eye to eye. It's, again, this is a guy coming into our business.
Yeah, that's
I
right.
I got to protect our
that's
business.
That's right.
So when I heard that attitude, you watch. So the fire extinguisher comes out, boom. And I guess he was some kind of amateur wrestler 167 years ago. And he went down, and you can see him. Like an ankle, kind of an ankle pick.
Right.
And you see me raising the fire extinguisher over his head. And if you, I don't know if you can hear it, but I heard it. Gorilla Monsoon going, Roddy, no! never mind. Sorry. Mr. Downey, could you let go there?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, little things.
Oh, that's so great. Roddy, we're out of time. It's so great talking to you, though, man. Good luck with the stuff at the Punchline and at the Fan Access. And, hey, maybe we'll still get to see that Piper's Pit with Rock and Cena, because I have a feeling that this is not ending at WrestleMania, that I think it's going to carry on.
If you do, I guarantee I'll blow your socks off. May all your dreams come true. God bless y'all. Thanks for having me.
All right, and we're back on the show, and now we will go through some feedback to our Roddy Piper career retrospective. Do you want to start, Way?
Sure. We'll go to Hackman from Minnesota. I don't know why.
Okay.
My best memories of Piper were his pre-WWF days, more so from the NWA and Georgia Championship Wrestling, since I didn't have access to Portland. I recently found out that my best friend's sister was in a movie with Roddy Piper, The Bad Pack. Now I'm going to have to go seek it out and watch it.
The Bad Pack. There's probably a lot of those kinds of movies that Roddy Piper was in that you might not be aware of. Christian, my first experience viewing Piper was renting WrestleMania 8. I think I just so happened to pick one of his best matches ever. But it wasn't the work in the ring that grabbed me, but his promo skills. Piper was a guy that I just loved whenever he had a mic in his hand. Granted, looking back, some of his promos are extremely weird and made little sense, but it was still always incredible. This may be a little random, but one of my favorite moments from his career was when the fans voted him to team with Ric Flair at Cyber Sunday in 2006 to win the tag titles from the Spirit Squad. The two just seemed to love this small run together. Which would have been the second title that Piper ever won during that little run in the fall of 06, which then actually Piper then discovered he had cancer while he was on the road with the company. The thing I really don't understand is why he never had a world title run, even just a short reign like Dusty had with the NWA title. He was always either the top heel or face in whatever company he was in, and a big draw. Piper really was bigger than wrestling, and his death showed that. He will be missed. He wasn't given a title run in the 80s because Hogan was the guy. There was no reason to take the title off Hogan at that time period.
Aram from Denmark. WrestleMania 8 was always my highlight when I think about Roddy Piper, and also his IC title win over the Mountie was amazing to see. And for some reason, I can never forget his commentary during the Virgil-Ted DiBiase match at SummerSlam 91. He was one of the biggest stars ever, but I never felt he got the notice he deserved. There will never be one like him again, and did he ever have problems with anyone in the business? I don't seem to recall having heard anything controversial about him before.
In terms of the question there, Piper had lots of issues with guys over the years, whether it be promoters, He was a guy that was not afraid to, things were not going a certain way in a company, he was bolting. He wasn't going to be sticking around. He was very conscious of his image, of his reputation, and to a paranoid degree. I don't think that's a stretch to say at all with this guy. Next up, we go to Brad. I truly hope this is the last career tribute you guys have to do for a long time. In my personal opinion, Piper was the best promo in wrestling. His frantic delivery and convulsing body gestures had me captivated. Plus, he had a pretty sweet Panther t-shirt and a strong Western Canadian accent, so he sounded just like my favorite uncle. He was one of a kind and will be sorely missed.
Matt in suburban Detroit, Roddy Piper was an awesome character, whether he's chewing bubblegum, smashing coconuts, painting himself half black, or grilling the boss on Piper's Pit. It's sad he maintained a long run in any one promotion, or that Hogan never dropped Piper the belt. I think he means he never maintained a long run. I always wondered how big of a player Piper would have turned Sean O'Hare into during his 2003 SmackDown run.
Ronaldo from Italy. Roddy Piper is truly one of a kind, one of the original promo kings, and one of the last true territory guys, and one of the makers of the WWE's success when it mattered the most. I'll always remember Piper as one of the few veterans that didn't need the business as much as the business needed him. Rest in peace.
Billy Kidman's jorts. Roddy Piper was the most believable personality in the history of wrestling, and every promo that he cut felt real. When he was in the ring, you saw his emotion. It felt authentic. There was nothing fake or contrived about the guy. Him being legit out of his mind and truly believing that wrestling was real made him so great. There was a genuine love affair with the fans and him because of that. You will never see anything quite like him again.
We go to Chris from Melbourne. Rowdy Roddy Piper, one of the greatest on the mic in this business. A man of the people, he just seemed to have a connection with the audience right from the start. A trendsetter for the future generations, the famous Piper's Pit segments, the transition to movies, and did a few music covers. A member of the WWE Hall of Fame and Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, appearing on WWE until early 2015, hosting his own podcast, and still appearing at local indie shows up until the last month. Sadly, a man that will be missed and gone far too soon.
Jesse from Baldwin Village. Much like Brian Mann and many of the posters here, my first exposure to Hot Rod was in 92 at WrestleMania 8 and earlier in that year's Rumble. I remember the program with Brett vividly as the two were my favorite wrestlers, and Roddy's great knee-high to a grasshopper promo still sticks in my head. But I think my favorite promo of his was before Survivor Series 2010, when in a Piper's Pit segment, Roddy heated up an otherwise tepid title match between Orton and Barrett with Cena as the guest ref. He put so much importance on the lineage of the title and how it would be unconscionable for Cena to screw up Orton to help his boss Barrett. It really made me care. I recall an incident when I was 6 or 7. I was playing with my plastic toy wrestlers on a beach. I would periodically throw them in the lake as they were eliminated from a match. I would later retrieve the eliminated wrestlers from the lake, but when it came time to find Roddy, he was MIA. I cried and cried because I was a stupid, stupid child and made my father help me look for him for over an hour. Alas, Roddy was never found, lost to the sea, just as the real Hot Rod is now too, lost to the earth. Rest in peace.
Do you know how you could fish that out of the water? With a hot rod. We go to Lee Russell, who writes, I think I actually got into the WWF / WWE in part because of Piper. My grandfather hooked me on Canadian-based pro wrestling as a kid in the 80s, so I watched a lot of Stampede and some of the indie stuff that toured around like Grand Prix. Finding out that guys like Bret Owen, along with a whole pack of other Stampede guys from the WWF, I started to watch them, and the first feud I got into was Roddy's face run with the IC title and his eventual match with Bret, which elevated Bret if you think about it. I was quickly a fan for life after that and sought out his other stuff. Before that, I had seen him in John Carpenter's They Live, and I followed a lot of the ups and downs of his movie career since. He had a talent for acting that's sadly underrated. He had his demons, nobody's perfect, and Piper was the first to admit it. It's too bad in the last months. We're mirrored in the silly crap with Austin and Podcast One, a true original, dying far too soon. Thank you for the memories.
Dave from Dublin. Roddy Piper was the first wrestler I ever met. Because of that, I will always have a fond memory of him. I was 8 years old, and he was doing a signing at an HMV to promote the WWF's first visit to Dublin. I lined up and finally met him and shook his huge hands, and I was speechless. I still have the notepad signed, to Dave Hot Rod, 93. He was warm and friendly then, just like he was when I met him at WrestleMania 25. The WrestleMania 8 match was good, but a little overrated in my opinion. Watching the war to settle the score in the WrestleMania 1 stuff, you could tell the genuine heat he had. People wanted to strangle this guy, and that takes a special talent. I loved his time in WCW feuding with Hogan and the NWO as well. Listening to various podcasts and interviews, including his own, you could tell this was a genuine man who dearly loved his wife and kids, and it was so refreshing and rare to hear that so much from pro wrestlers. He reminded you what his life was all about, family.
Okay, we have a lengthy one here from John from Minneapolis, from John from Indianapolis. I will not read the whole thing here because it's a bit of a lengthy post. He writes, as far as matches go, the infamous dog collar match from Starrcade 83 against Greg Valentine stands out as his most recognizable match from everybody I know at the pizzeria I hung out at. Even more than his WrestleMania bouts against Mr. T, his least favorite man on the planet. My personal favorite matches include his WrestleMania 8 IC title match against Bret in my home city of Indianapolis, which showed that he could put on a great match, and Starrcade 96 against Hogan. It seemed like that Piper was tough as nails. He conquered bad hips, broken bones, strained relationships, and even cancer. Sadly, the mortality of man is too prevalent, and not one human is invincible to the inevitability that when our time comes, we must depart. It was so sudden, and thoughts and prayers go out to the Piper clan. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much for your feedback for our Roddy Piper career retrospective. And I will bring an end to the show. I feel way over the last week, I have talked so much. I feel I'm on like just a computer. I feel that's what I've turned into. Where words are coming out of my mouth.
You're a broadcaster.
Without even, I'm just in a weird mode of lots of talking of late.
Do you feel like you need a break?
I'm going to do what that guy from Weezer did, Rivers Cuomo. I'm going to go into the mountains and not speak for a week.
Okay, is that what he did?
Yeah, it's got a specific name to it that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Okay, you're going to take a vow of silence.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that I can't say the word of the therapy involving not speaking. That's what I'm going to do for a week.
Okay, so does that mean you won't be at work?
I'm disappearing after the G1 permanently.
Oh.
No, I'm not. That's not true. But next week, I will be back.
Oh, okay.
And are we going to discuss the G1 next week?
I think so.
Okay, we're going to keep it with that. We will once again repost the matches. They're all up on New Japan World, so they are accessible if you do have that service. Or you can go through alternate means. I'm sure you can find most of them in other areas.
Yeah, for people who missed last week, we were this week supposed to talk about basically a history of the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 tournament. And we picked a wide selection of matches throughout the history of that tournament. So we'll post those matches up again. We'll talk about that next week.
Yes. Some of them will be the 91 final, which was the very first G1, 96, which was a very important one. and I want to say 04, 07, and 2012, if I'm not mistaken. So five G1 finals will be reviewed next week. So we'll chat about that. And you can, of course, follow along with this year's G1 up at liveaudiowrestling.com. We have shows up after each tournament day. Way's been listening to them vigorously. What's been your favorite one?
Oh, the last one.
Oh, you enjoyed day 10.
Loved it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it was a special number. Okay, well, that's going to wrap things up. We'll go out with some more Roddy Piper, and we will be back next week with a brand new edition of Review Away.
Roddy Piper, come on. Can I square with you?
Sure.
I want to tell you something. You and I have had our days when we have not gotten along all that well, but I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
My friend, you have been one phenomenal asset to this great sport of professional wrestling, and that's coming from right here, pal. Right here.
Well, thank you. I never heard you say nothing like that to me before. You want to be square about it, I'll be square about it. I'll tell you what I'm doing. You see, first of all, I want you to understand something. This is my last fight, and so I'm not selling tickets for nothing, and I'm not trying to make you love me because you're never going to see me again. I'm not trying to get any points with you at all because you're not. It doesn't matter anymore, does it? So what I say right now is very sincere, and people are asking me about retiring. I mean, I'm in my prime. I'm at the top of my profession. In the Funk and Wagnall Dictionary, in the encyclopedia, you can find my name. I've done a lot for my sport, and the sport has done a lot for me. I'm real proud, man. Real proud of professional wrestling, and I helped to make it what it is today.
Listen to that. Could you think of a better way of going out, Jess? And a true champion in Rowdy Roddy Piper. The last time we will ever see him inside the squared circle. Standing ovation by this 90,000 plus on hand here in the Silver Dome. And Piper enjoying breathing it all in. And he deserves it.